Okay, now we got a big episode to jump into today, but damn it if I don't have a cold open to squeeze in here, Kate. You ready?
Yes.
So I have, like, spies across the world on true crime shows. Now, these people, I cannot tell you who they are for their own safety, but this person has asked me that I refer to them as Deej. That's their code name. Deej works on true crime shows, and I reached out to Deej because I was still flummoxed why that dope of a dingus, veteran Las Vegas detective, decided to do Dateline 7 years after Snapped.
I've always refused these.
Like, if this case really touched him to his little heart, why didn't he do the Snapped? I even posed on the episode. I said, like, do these people get a couple grand?
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to Deej. He says it's true that people, in fact, do get money sometimes, and it varies. But guess what? If you are serving active duty in law enforcement, you're not allowed to accept that money. What do you think?
Interesting.
Yeah, so
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a great rule, and it makes sense now why you almost exclusively only see former detective and stuff on the true crime shows. I thought it was that they retire after 10 years of detecting, and I think it's just that no, that's when they start doing the shows and can accept that money. Now, when I heard this, I thought, oh, please tell me that when I look up Detective Dingus's history, please tell me he was working when the Snapped episode came out 7 years ago and that he's retired now. No, I wanted it bad, Kate, but no, he's still working. And I guess I gotta give him credit here. Dude's been in the detecting game for like 30 some years. This motherfucker's still at it.
He's still a dingus, though, for calling us out.
Oh, yeah, f*** him. I mean, I don't know.
Just didn't feel like murder was entertainment or should be entertainment.
Anyway, that's it. That's a little update for you. But aren't you excited that we have somebody on the inside now?
Deej, like DJ Tanner.
Yep. Damn it! That's who it is! She's pissed now. Damn it, Kate!
I'm Lester Holt.
Howdy, Holdheads. Kurt Money here, alongside my co-host.
You already know, your girl, Kateline.
We are here to discuss the season 32, episode 19, Dateline, called The Last Weekend. Here is an IMDb description. Oh, and also, this aired December 8th, 2023. A Friday, but this is not a Friday fatty.
Interesting.
But anyway, here we go. After trumpet player Scott Sessions fails to show up for a scheduled gig, his family learns that his body was abandoned in the remote Colorado Rockies mountains. As the investigation narrows in on two suspects, a second murder catches the police by surprise. Hosted by the OG KM.
Here's Keith Morrison with The Last Weekend.
Now, Kateline, what did you think of this Dateline?
Well, Kurt, I have already seen this one.
Right. But have you?
But I think I saw it on 2020. So there were no surprises here.
Okay. It is a 2020. It's from last summer. It aired, I don't know, a month before we started this pod. So you're watching 2020s with Jillionaire, I feel, right? You sure do watch a lot of a show you claim to hate.
You gotta know your enemy, Kurt.
And you know what? Enemy is correct. My God, do I have a fury to rain down upon 2020 in their production that I cannot wait to get into. But even though you knew this story, what's your overall take on this Friday thin guy?
I think it's thin.
Really?
A guy gets murdered. They look into a suspect. They're pretty sure it's them. They look a little further. Yeah, it's them. Okay.
I disagree. Kateline, I'm buzzing about this episode.
Really?
I'm buzzing because I think it could have been a proper fatty. Now, that would have meant bringing in the guy who owned the farm, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, how long is the 2020 one?
Hour 20. It's a full ep for them.
Oh.
Yeah. But also, a very minor patented Kurt Money bomb. This was also featured on a show called Calls from the Inside. That's a ID HBO Max joint. That you know I'm watching the shit out of now, because I watched that episode to see if I get some inside scoops, and I just kind of dig it. So now I'm just watching Calls from the Inside. I'm into it.
What does that mean, Calls from the Inside?
They play some recording of an inmate talking to, like, their girlfriend on a payphone.
Got it.
I just wanted to get out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
She thinks she's more than she is.
It's pretty good. Anyway, so they covered it. 2020 covered it, and Oh my God. Okay, we just got to get into it. It is February 10th, 2020. George Gray, an Elvis impersonator. Where the fun begins, Caitlin. Okay? Right off the bat, we're seeing an Elvis impersonator named George Gray.
Elvis was in the house, or at least an impersonator was. George Gray.
Now, Kate. Okay, I got to make sure I word this right because I've been sitting on this for 3 days, okay? Hang on. I'm going to play it cool. Kate, don't you think it's weird that he's okay? Wait, hang on. Damn it. Kate, don't you think it's weird that he lets his last name be Gray, but he won't let his hair?
Did Elvis have gray hair?
What? No, this guy had jet black hair. I'm roasting him because his name is literally Gray, but he can't let his hair be gray.
Because Elvis did. And you know, when you think of Colorado, you automatically think of Elvis.
That's right. You do automatically think of Elvis. Now, the wild thing was, when this guy came on screen, I literally shit my pants because I said Elvis is alive. What the hell? I thought he died 50 years ago. But then this George Gray said, no, no, no. When people ask, I say, I'm not Elvis. I'm just keeping his music alive.
I feel his spirit alive within me, but I'm not him.
Yeah, okay.
Shocking.
I tell people I'm not Elvis. I'm just here to keep the music and spirit alive.
I mean, already I love this world. I love the idea. I want a sitcom about the backing band for an Elvis impersonator in 2024. That to me is a funny f***ing show.
In Colorado.
In Colorado. Exactly. Colorado is key. Boy. I've been getting excited recently thinking about all the year-end tallies that we're going to have. And one of them is going to be to see where the most murders happened. And right now, it's friggin' Phoenix versus Colorado.
Totally.
And I know that's a state versus city, but that's what it is. Colorado is popping with murders.
Yeah. There's just something about that Wild West.
Yeah, or like the high elevation.
The altitude makes everybody want to kill.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a Sunday night, and Elvis is getting ready to put on his show. And his trumpeter, because he's got like a big band behind him, but his trumpeter, Scott Sessions, is a no-show. People are worried about him. They're texting him.
It's very unlike him.
How f***ing wild is it that his last name is Sessions, and he went on to be a trumpet player? I mean, that's some dead-on stuff.
It works for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a Duke Silver-type fake name, Scott Sessions. I'm a trumpet player.
Is it his real last name?
He was adopted into the name Sessions, but that music was still in him. Hmm. Anyway, kind of funny.
The missus has something to say.
Yeah, she's like, Kurt, why are you talking about this? She's saying, Kurt, move on. Next day starts, and guess what that Elvis impersonator does 6 out of the 7 days of the week? Oh, he's a morning DJ.
Of course he is.
I love it.
Like a drive time DJ.
Been talking with the voice.
Good morning. It is going to be a beautiful day here in northern Colorado.
That was great. But he was concerned about his friend Scott. So he called Scott's dad. This poor guy. Huh? Scott's dad is in this episode and in every other show about this murder. Feel bad for that guy.
I got to be his dad for 54 years.
But he calls his dad and says, hey, Scott didn't show up for his gig last night. And old Elvis is quick to point out that Scott's dad said, oh, really? He loves that band. Like, I just imagine that's the ego of George Gray, Mr. Elvis, right?
Totally. Yeah, there was a lot said in that conversation, but the thing that stuck with him was the compliment about his shitty band.
I said, hey, Stan, Scott didn't show up for the gig last night. He goes, well, that's unusual. He loves that band.
I'll tell you this, on the 2020, they're asking him the same questions, of course. And look, I have no way of proving this, but you could feel an edit that happens where they're cutting him off saying that same line of, well, that's strange. He loves that band. Because it's almost word for word, but they cut it short. That was pretty funny to me.
He said, hey, Scott didn't make it to the gig last night. And he said, well, that's strange.
Turns out, that's not the only thing he missed.
So Elvis and Scott's dad meet over at Scott's house to see if he's there. And this was again, now it sounds like we're really focusing on this Elvis guy. After this, he kind of pieces out. Like, we're not going to talk about him much again.
Thank God.
Morning, DJ. Nighttime Elvis.
They go over to the house and they're looking for him. So at that point, they can't find Scott, but they find his cat and they call the cops. They report this guy missing. Now, at the same time, there's a snowplow guy making his rounds up in the Rockies, and he sees a little fire going on. He decides to go check it out. And what does he find?
He finds Scott dead and burning.
Yeah, and he thinks it's a tree first, because he says it. But the branches were wearing boots.
Good observation.
That's a pretty funny visual, though.
And then I realized the branches had shoes on them or boots.
I mean, it also kind of tells you what that body shape was in. And when the 911 op was like, is there anything you could do to save him? You could feel the pause of that guy going, nah, dog, he is a crisp.
Yeah, brutal.
I have a dead body.
Okay, and do you believe he's beyond any help?
Yeah, he's definitely passed away.
So they find this body, and they don't know it's Scott yet, but they bring him back to the morgue, and they fingerprint the body, and they find out that it is, in fact, missing person Scott Sessions. So they find out what car Scott was driving and where it went Saturday night, and they find out it's still there. It's a parking lot at a grocery store in Greeley.
We ended up locating his vehicle in the parking lot of the King Supers.
So now they're thinking, who wants Scott dead? So they did the old faithful. Who's he dating? Let's go start pointing fingers.
Yep.
Okay, now, this was perhaps my favorite throat commercial from Keith ever was the introduction of Loretta. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
No, what was it?
Okay, so Loretta is Scott's girlfriend that he dated on and off for 2 years. But then they had like a domestic issue. She had a restraining order and all that. Loretta is the blonde that we see in the interrogation room. And as they're going to commercial, Keith goes,
maybe Scott's ex-girlfriend would have some answers for the police. Maybe.
Because then Loretta goes,
I called in sick for 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. I can't tell you why.
Commercial!
Loretta did not have to say, I can't tell you why. Why would you say that? That points to your guilt immediately. Just say I wasn't feeling well.
And especially on a throw to commercial, that's what I thought. I thought, we've got another Mustang America on our hands. That's what I was thinking.
Totally.
She's about to tear that top off.
I'm in Mustang America!
But it turns out they come back from break. We talked to Loretta. She didn't do it. She's got nothing to do with it.
Right. We were fooled.
Yeah, I guess because you already knew the outcome. Maybe you weren't as fooled as me. Because when I say that I was red in the face, crying from laughter, that's not an exaggeration, Kate. I was dying. Because I was instantly thinking of Mustang America. And I was like, we've got another loony blonde in our hands. I fucking love it.
Even though I had seen it, I didn't remember which girlfriend was in cahoots. So
could have been her.
Yeah, she probably had something to do with this. I knew that, spoiler, it was a man who did the killing. But I couldn't remember who the woman was.
Yeah. Fair. They're interrogating. They're just talking to Loretta. And she actually saved a voicemail from Scott on her phone.
Hey, how's it going? Call you back as soon as I can. Anyways, hope you're having a great day. Obviously. Bye.
So here's the weird thing, okay? I got a number of infos from 2020. Here's the best thing, though, and this is the sickest burn on 2020, and nothing we say in the rest of this episode will burn them as hard as this fact, is that Loretta's on 2020. But they don't say Loretta. Loretta didn't want to be named. So they say,
Scott's former girlfriend agreed to do an interview, but she asked that we not use her name.
But she's not only in Dateline saying her full name.
What to make of Loretta?
She's in Calls from the Inside saying her full name of Loretta.
With Scott's past relationship with Loretta, she became a person of interest.
So she just didn't want 2020.
So Loretta was so embarrassed at the idea of being on 2020 because of how bad it is.
Yep. She asked that we not use her name.
So here's the crazy thing about that arrest. There's a little bit of time we spend here where Keith is like, you know, we're not all saints. And Scott wasn't either. He had a rough relationship with his exes. Specifically, Loretta, he threw coffee at her and then the cops arrested him. Now, Dateline did not give you the inside scoop on this.
2 years earlier, they discovered Scott's temper had gotten the better of him, and a then-girlfriend was given an order of protection. Her name? Loretta Bolick.
2020 did. So he throws the coffee at her. She says, get out of here or I'm going to call the cops. Scott leaves immediately, calls the cops himself because he thinks that Loretta's going to, so he's like, I might as well call, maybe it'll look better. And so then they show up and have to arrest him. But she didn't call the cops. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes. Artists and musicians are very passionate people.
It's true.
You know how musicians are. Either temperamental cats. Who knows what got into them?
Yeah.
They love deeper.
Yeah. And actually, Loretta was talking about that in 2020. No Joke was talking about how he was very passionate. He'd sing me songs. And when he'd go up on stage, women would try and touch his butt. And then she goes, I call them fangirls. You didn't make up fangirls, Loretta.
Scott's really good at love, and he's good at expressing love. Just all those romantic things. When Scott played up on stage, you know, women would grab his butt or try to kiss him. I always called him fangirls.
Also, that never happened.
You don't think anybody's reaching for Scotty's butt?
No.
No.
Where? He's way in the back of the stage. Also, the trumpet has never been a puss magnet. Ever.
Never. I mean, the way they tell it about old Scott Sessions, though. He was making it happen, but that was shocking to me. They really made him out to be a Lothario in the other shows, and I was like, you know what? Good for him, because you know who I saw was as if Ned Ryerson could play the trumpet.
Ned Ryerson got the shingles real bad senior year, almost didn't graduate. Bing!
Is he not in Stephen Tobolowsky in Groundhog Day with his little hat? He's a dead ringer for him.
Bing!
Bing!
I love Ned Ryerson.
And also that little hat also brings us back to the Burbs, because he looks like Hans at the end when Bruce Dern goes, "Hey, Pinocchio!
Where are you going?"
And then he goes over and tackles him. Anyway, so there's that. There's a nice little Burbs connect.
Happy for you.
Thank you. Okay, so.
You better be using a clip from Groundhog Day of him going, "Ned? Ned Ryerson?" It's like day 80.
I don't know where you're headed, but can you call in sick?
I gotta get going.
So the cops are talking to Scott's dad. They're looking for him. They're looking into X's. So while they were talking to Loretta, they got a text message because they had had a search warrant for Scott's house. And while they were talking to Loretta, they were rooting around and they found like a post-it with all of his passwords on it. And so all the cops are like, woohoo!
Let them log into his Facebook account where they found some very private messages.
They text Atwood, the f***ing dingus detective. Boy, do we have some lazy f***ing dinguses today. They f***ed up hard.
Yeah, but they solved the case pretty quickly.
What? No. No, they didn't. They solved it because...
This wasn't like a decade of it going unsolved and people dropping the ball and ignoring evidence.
I would argue they dropped the ball, then kicked it down the street, then took a nap, but let's table that for now. So Atwood cuts Loretta loose. They don't need to know why she missed work Monday and Tuesday. He leaves the interrogation to go over to Scott's house. They get the login, and that's when they're swimming around his Facebook, and they find out he's flirting with some ladies, one of which is Miss Heather Frank.
Heather and Scott had been sending messages to each other that Saturday night.
These messages are a pretty spicy. We see that the night he disappeared, she is very thirsty for him. She's saying, come over now, I need you. And he's being cute about it, like, I'm gonna shower first. I hope you're ready for me. I smell amazing.
I'm on my way over. Three smiley faces. Warning, I smell pretty amazing.
I mean, this to me was very Ned Ryerson. This was the energy of Ned Ryerson going like, Ned's getting laid tonight!
Am I right or am I right? Or am I right?
Anyway,
yeah, go ahead. Yeah, it was sad though, because her texts... I could tell right away that it wasn't really her because they were not enthusiastic. They were not.
No.
They were not actually flirty. They were very like, okay, hurry up. When are you here? Where are you? Not like, yeah. I can't wait to smell you. I love that. I'm ready. You know, it was just very point blank, which had me thinking, well, also I already knew that someone else is luring him over to this house.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're thinking. Because that's the last we hear of it. But he's on the phone with his dad outside of Heather Frank's door going, oh, I found the address. Because she lived in like an apartment complex, but it was all one story and all the garages were on one. So it was a little confusing like where her door would be. So literally before he walks in the doorway, which tomorrow will have a puddle of blood next to it directly inside the door, he's on the phone to his dad saying, love you, see you tomorrow with mom. I'm at my friend's house, bye. Pretty sad. And he's there, he's like, he's walking into a mystic cologne, he's got a fresh bottle of booze, and then he opens up and is immediately murdered, or so we believe.
Right.
Okay, so now cops are saying, we gotta talk to this Heather Frank. We gotta talk to her. This is when Doug's Day Diner is introduced, and my one and biggest gripe with KM. What did he call this place, Kate?
I have no idea. The things that you pick up on.
Heather Frank, who was a waitress over at Doug's Diner.
More than once, he calls it Doug's Diner.
Mornings revolve around breakfast at Doug's Diner.
But they show the exterior of this place, and it's very clearly called Doug's Day Diner. Doug's Day Diner. Sounds like a minor thing, right? Incorrect. Because you know the owner, you know Doug is watching this Dateline going, yes, we're spreading the word. And there's Keith running his mouth, not even getting the name right.
Keith.
What do you think?
These are small businesses.
Yeah. And I thought maybe it was like, Oh, that's what the sign says, but everybody in town calls it this. But in the other shows, everybody else was saying Day Diner.
She worked as a server over at Doug's Day Diner.
I feel like everybody would be saying Doug's Day.
That's good.
Heading over to Doug's Day.
That's good. That's good. Okay, so when we take the show on the road and we do one in Colorado, we got to go to Doug's Day.
Shout out to Doug's Day.
Yep. And then hopefully there'll be the... Keith said the perfume of bacon will fill the air or something. He has a nice, colorful little touch for that.
Bacon and eggs perfumed the air.
Kurt.
What? Yeah.
Didn't you go through like a bacon phase?
Okay, I've never left the bacon phase. I love bacon. Bacon is what introduced me to hot sauce, and you know how I feel about hot sauce. So that, just to let you know.
I don't think I do, actually.
What? Did I drink hot sauce on the reg?
We've never shared a meal together.
Fair. I'm sorry. I put that up there with Starburst. It's just one of those things.
We did share a meal on our date.
Correct. I did not bring hot sauce to medieval times. You're right.
And then I guess we ate when we worked on that weird job we're not allowed to talk about.
Yeah. And I did not bring hot sauce then either.
That was too classy of a place.
Absolutely. Way too classy. Caitlin and I had to sign NDA agreements. For national security shit. And this is not an exaggeration when I say that we were gabbing with FBI agents. That's not a joke.
Yeah.
We were.
It was a government thing, and we're not allowed to talk about it.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Anyway, back to this Dateline. The one cool part about Keith and Doug's Day Diner was that it allows me to introduce the Cheers theme to the podcast. Because Keith point blank talks about Cheers, right? He says, a place where everybody knows your name. Now, that doesn't seem like exciting news, but little inside baseball. Last week, it took every inch of restraint in me to not put the Cheers theme under you when you said everybody knows your name when you're talking about small towns. Mm. And I said, Kurt, don't force it. It'll come naturally. And what happened the very next week?
Remember the classic TV series Cheers? The bar was a gathering place where everybody knows your name.
So there we go.
Kismet.
There we go. Okay, so they're looking at these messages with Heather Frank. So now, oh, and also, they're looking at the cell phone forensics, and the three cell phones are together for at least 12 hours Saturday night.
At that apartment.
That's Kevin Eastman's phone.
He is Heather's boyfriend, who is not happy about her relationship with Scott.
Right, and the cops find out about him because they see a Subaru outside Heather's place with red dirt, similar to where Scott's body was found. And a little bit of damage on the front. They check out the plates, and that belongs to a Kevin Eastman, a real piece of shit that's been pushing Heather around for a while. I mean, so much so that they show us footage in here of her at the hospital, like at a previous time when he had beat her, and she's like, this isn't the first time.
Heather had some rough relationships.
Yeah, and even her friends were like, we don't know why he was with this, or why she was with this guy. And I gotta agree, she seemed cool and was cute, and this guy was such a scrub and a lame-o. Even without knowing that he killed her, don't you think that Heather should be dating above that level a little bit or no? What do you think?
Absolutely.
So they're looking into Kevin, and they're keeping an eye on those two. They've got the camera, the GPS, they're watching their phones. So now what they're thinking is, if these three phones were together Saturday night, the night that Scott Sessions died, then Heather is an accomplice. Like, they're thinking Heather and Kevin are in on this together. They duped Scott, murdered him, and now they're off and running.
Still looking for Eastman's suspected accomplice and ex-girlfriend, Heather Frank.
Monday morning, Heather Frank, she's a waitress at Doug's Day Diner. She shows up for work, but she's like disheveled and out of it and not perky. Her coworker, Shelby, who she's friends with, notices this fact that, like, Heather is disheveled, something's up with her. And she had just called out sick the day before. Now, let's do this math. Scott Sessions died Saturday night. Heather Frank calls in sick Sunday, shows up to work Monday disheveled. So, Caitlin, where do you think Heather Frank is in all this at that moment?
I think she was witness to the murder. Whether or not it was her idea or that she participated, I don't know, but perhaps she did participate and then started feeling bad about it, went to work looking upset, and then when Kevin realized that she was maybe feeling guilty and was thinking about confessing, he killed her.
Okay, God, I'm not even sure. I'm not even going to say it's a possibility that she was in on it because, like, why? That would just suck. Because to me, she has a long history of trying to get away from this guy. So why would she concoct a plan to kill somebody with it?
That's
right?
True.
So that, I don't even want to entertain that thought, because then it's, you're kind of getting into a territory of, like, she's in on this for her own reasons. I choose to believe that Kevin Eastman snapped, went over there Saturday night, But see, the cops say that Kevin was the one texting, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it wasn't like sexy time stuff. He was like, ah. So what, Heather is like there saying like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're fighting. But she's subdued or something when Scott comes over. Because he comes in and knife slit, dies right there. There's a giant puddle of blood in the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Scott Sessions died. So there were 5 days where Heather Frank was alive, but being forced to go about her usual business, I guess. Right? I mean, she did that day of work.
Yeah. We'll never know.
No, because of course, Kevin Eastman's not talking. So annoying.
And even if he did talk, could you believe anything he said?
No, 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 no. Oh, that friend Shelby, her last name was Kabam. Oh, that's cool.
Kabam?
That's cool. No, Kabam. It's either Kabam or Kabong. Both options, very cool for last name.
Very cool.
Said her fellow waitress, Shelby Kabong.
Did you ever suspect Heather? I did. I genuinely did.
I did. When I saw the surveillance of Heather and Kevin leaving the apartment, I thought, oh, they're in cahoots. This was planned from the start. She helped lure Scott to the house so that Kevin could kill him. Unclear why she would want Scott dead.
Yeah, like what would the motive be? There's not no insurance, nothing. There's no reason for Heather to want him dead.
No.
But at this point, she's a suspect. And 2020 is really, like, they pressed that angle where, like, for a good act, Heather is a suspect.
Well, they had to stretch it to an hour and 20 somehow.
Yeah.
We got a tracker on Heather Frank's vehicle, as well as Kevin Eastman's vehicle.
Is now a good time for when I tell you the mortal sin that 2020 did?
Yes.
Okay, now look, I know that we're partial to Dateline, and somebody could even say, yeah, well, there's probably people that feel the same way you do about 48 hours, blah, 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 blah. That's fine. 2020, though, I think should have their true crime card revoked, show canceled, because the things that they get up to are against basic visual storytelling. I texted you about it and I sent you a vid. This dumb, they've got Gutman walking around talking. He's a total tool.
But some say that his personality played louder than his horn.
Okay, I don't like his voice. I don't like how he's talking about jazz. It's so good in the area.
It's about an hour north of Denver and has a thriving blues scene.
Hate it, hate it, hate it.
Do you like his like white streak in his hair?
No, no. And I did not like that it was cold and I could see his nose was red and you could tell he was like, hey, I gotta get the story. This, he's doing walking and talking directly to the camera and he's talking to us, which is what Dateline does. Like AC or KM, they'll be walking and they'll be directly looking at the audience. Because like there are perspective into this story. There are narrator. 2020 does that too. They've got Gutman's dumbass walking up, looking at camera, talking. And then they'll cut to that same Joker in his own talking head, looking off camera and saying more exposition. So it's like he's saying the same type of VO he does when he's looking at the camera, but now he's just in a talking head by himself looking off camera. How disorienting is that?
Very. I don't like that they insert themselves into it like they're subjects, which is funny because that's what we had some commenter say about your girl. But she doesn't do that.
Yeah.
2020 does that.
Yeah. Do you agree, though, 180 axis-wise, the eyesight thing we learn in film school?
It's a jump cut.
I feel like this is even more egregious than that. What am I supposed to think he's talking to? I'm genuinely baffled how that can go through a notes phase and everybody goes, yep, we're good.
I agree. It's disorienting. It creates an unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
And a confusing visual and point of view.
And it's all just so we can see them in some nice lighting, do their best delivery. When, like, we don't want a good delivery of exposition. We want it told for real people that are in front of this camera awkwardly recounting something that happened to them.
Yeah, just...
like, that's what we're in it for.
We don't need to see their talking head. Get some B-roll and some VO.
Yeah, and not only that, but Teeth was in that episode, too. The blonde that you don't care for.
I don't like her.
She was also in it. So it's like, who's hosting this episode? It's in shambles. Who's in charge? Who's in charge? Nobody knows. 2020 sucks. Boom.
Good, honey.
They didn't know where Scott's car was. Turns out his car was in the parking lot of a grocery store called King Super. S-O-O, not S-U. King Supers. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
But his car is there, and what's wild is that Heather, she lives around the corner. That's kind of wild.
Small town?
Is it? I don't know. Hey, tune in later.
So they have surveillance of someone driving Scott's car into that parking lot, parking it, getting out, and walking away, not towards the store. And
Yeah.
They said it was very clear that it was a man, but I don't think that was very clear. I mean, I knew it was a man.
Thank you.
But there's nothing about that video that's clearly a man, especially because it's grainy, really far away, and they're wearing a coat.
Yeah. It was very funny to me how confident they were to say that was a man when in that Family Feud episode, Ghost Rider, remember? They had very clearly a man on a security cam in the Taylor's driveway.
Yep, they're both named Taylor.
And they were like, well, we can't say if it was a man or a woman. But meanwhile, here, there's this little speck in the background walking, and they're like, well, that was clearly a man, so we know it was Kevin. Moving on.
Right. They weren't wrong. It's just bold. It's a bold claim to make that early.
Yeah. They follow the trail of their phones, and they had driven 2 hours towards some mountain where Scott's body was eventually found. But they follow the route that they took, and they find a security camera. And they actually get the tape, and they see Kevin Eastman's car that we saw in the parking lot earlier drive by, and then 3.5 hours later, drive back.
They know it's his car because it has the same damage on the front.
Yep.
As the damage they observed outside Heather's apartment.
Correct. And you can't tell who is in the car, if it's one or two people, which is a question we have right now, because finally time to talk about the grade A dingus, Inspector Justin Atwood.
The investigators had been full tilt for 5 days. They were all exhausted.
They only arrested Kevin Eastman because he was pouring gasoline into a tank at a gas station, and he had just driven from a burn pit. That's why they arrested him.
I thought they had been scoping out his house and watched him drive to the gas station.
Well, here's the thing, is that for 5 days, these cops were tailing him. And they had to go to the trouble. You've got to get like a warrant and to put a GPS tracker on a car, correct?
Yeah.
And you got to get a warrant. You got to go through a lot of legwork to be able to look at someone's cell phone records and like look at where they're pinging. That, you got a lot to present to the DA to get that.
You mean cell phone forensics, Kurt?
Exactly. I'm sorry. Resident Texpert, Kate Lyons, setting me straight. You don't get that stuff unless you do a lot of legwork and present it to the DA and the DA agrees. So they do all this and they spend 5 days where they're working so hard. They are working so hard to solve this case. And they see from one of their cameras that they had placed outside Heather Frank's apartment is they see Heather and Kevin leave, get in Kevin's car, and then drive to a farm. The cops follow them to this farm. It's dark. They don't know where he parked. They go, you know what? Let's go home for the night. Let's go home and see our kids. I'm not making that up, Kate. He said that.
The investigators went home to bed. All of them.
We're going to go get some sleep. We're going to go take showers. We're going to go visit with our families, see our kids.
Yes, but...
What?
They couldn't enter the property legally. And if it was a big farm and it's dark out, they can't see anything from the road. So... what's the point?
You're right, but you walked right into my trap. Because when they went home and patted their toddlers on the head and went to bed and kissed their wives, Kevin Eastman woke up at 3 and 4 and 5 a.m. and drove around, and the GPS saw him driving around just the Rockies, just driving around in the middle of the night. So that's when they freak out. They wake up the next day and go, oh, Kevin's doing something. So they look at all the stuff, and the one guy that can get to him the fastest goes, whoa, Kevin's at a legit burn pit right now, and I'm following him to a gas station.
Immediate thought was he was getting more gas to go back and destroy whatever remaining evidence there was at that burn pile.
You see what I'm saying?
If they had staked out and waited and saw him leave, they could have caught him red-handed.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe Heather Frank's still alive.
Heather was most likely killed during the hours the detectives were taking a rest.
Just make one poor sap stay up for 6 hours. That's all you need. Because they were up at 5 a.m. the next day. So all you gotta do is convince one person to watch that house overnight just in case. They left it all together.
All of them.
They hadn't talked to Heather Frank yet. But they knew that her phone was with Scott Sessions. You see why I'm so, like...
I do see. You're not wrong.
Yeah, and Keith, you know, good old Keith is like, hey, I kind of sucked that you sucked so hard, right? And of course...
Yeah, that sounds like Keith.
He said a little classier.
If you look back on that and you think, damn, why did we just spend one more night at it?
But do you know what their response was? It's a classic for lazy f***s who don't want to do their job.
What?
Hindsight is 2020. Hey, 2020! That's kind of funny.
Sure.
But, yeah, in hindsight, 2020.
Yeah.
We didn't make the decision to murder Heather Frank. No. That was a decision that Kevin Eastman made.
And so they bring him back to the station, and they're like, all right, dude, where's Heather? And he's playing dumb, saying, oh, I don't know. She's at work.
She's probably at work. She's not at work.
What did you think about Kevin Eastman and his performance in the interrogation room.
He got down on his knees and he prayed to his God to keep Heather safe, to make sure nothing happened, and to help the police figure out what was going on.
Prayed to God to help the police.
Let me help this man get to the bottom of this case.
Yeah, and now this was during a break that they took, so there was nobody in there. So naturally, I mean, obviously, it's performative.
Mm-hmm.
Right, obviously. But I would love to f*** with this guy to an extent where during trial, play that clip and go like, oh, dude, I thought that you should pay for this crime, but you clearly, your heart is in the right place. Your heart is in the right place. We've got footage of you praying for us. Go on, get out of here. Wouldn't that be fun? Because that's what he wants. That's what he wants by doing that stupid act.
I'm a man of God.
Ugh.
I'm innocent.
Yeah, and he's also dry heaving. This f***ing stooge.
Clown.
I didn't like it. He comes in to the interrogation and he says, oh, I like your haircut. And the subtitles said that he said my artistic nephew did mine. I don't think he said artistic, Kate.
I heard autistic too.
Nice to meet you. I just love your haircut.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had my artistic nephew do mine.
Which doesn't work as a joke.
I think he was explaining why the haircut looked bad, implying that a child did it.
Right, but throwing in autistic as if that would make it messier, but that wouldn't.
But Kevin was complimenting it.
Yeah, it didn't work. He was clearly trying to, like, loosen up, but it was literally the first words out of his mouth. So, I don't know, if I was those cops, I'd be like, you could try and banter all you want, Kev, it ain't gonna work.
Yeah, nice try.
And I think it's while they're talking to him, they go check out that burn pit, and what do you know, they find Heather Frank's body wrapped up next to a fire, getting ready to be burnt, just like Scott Session was 5 days earlier.
Same exact way of wrapping the body.
Yeah. So they arrest him. They're like, all right, we found her body. You're a dumb shit. Go ahead, dry heave one more time, and then we gotta take you to the slammer. They do that, and Kevin's dumbass tries to say, he goes, Heather killed Scott, and then this guy Troy, whose house we're at and whose burn pit I'm using, he killed Heather. So I'm clean in all this.
Sure.
Did you buy any of that?
Of course not. And they weren't either.
The jury would have none of it.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Kevin Dean Eastman, guilty.
This guy, Troy Bunnell, who owns the property, he's still attached to this case. I just feel bad for him. Like, you know how people are in small towns or whatever, right? Like he was called a murderer, so he's a suspect to people. Anyway, I just feel bad for him.
You gotta be better at picking friends.
God, that's a good point. Maybe it is on him for picking Kevin Eastman as a friend. That's not a bad point. Okay, all right. Kevin Eastman, found guilty of both murders, goes away forever.
He'll spend the rest of his life in prison.
So this cop, Detective Deputy Dingus, I mean, he wasn't a mean person, but, I mean, he's a dum-dum, and he said something real smart at the end of this episode. Is because, you know, Keith is talking about, like, okay, so what happened between Scott's death and Heather's death? Like, was Heather involved in this or not? And his response is, God, yeah, that'd be a great question to ask Heather if she was still alive.
We're not asking Heather. We're asking you.
Yeah. And if we could ask the dead person who killed him, you're right. That would be a great question to ask him. This fucking idiot.
I think that would have been a very good question to ask her if she was alive this day.
I don't care for him. Okay. I believe, does this bring us to our list?
Well, I don't have anything. Kate's unnamed list.
Nothing hit, huh?
I don't think it's a small town, the kind of town where things like this don't happen. It seems like things like this happen all the time in these kind of Colorado towns.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've heard Greeley come up before.
I mean, I bet it's in either Harold Henthorne or...
It has definitely come up. It is definitely the kind of town where things like this happen. There's no Florida connection, yeah. There's no military connection, and no one started crying and apologized.
Nope. All right, well, that brings us to Kurt's Kick-Ass List.
Kick-Ass List.
The only hit I had was movies, because Doug's Day Diner, when Keith is talking Cheers, he talks about movies a little bit.
Would this be like the iconic diner of the movies and the kind of Americana?
It kind of is.
Next week, we will be discussing Down the Basement Stairs, which I think is another shorty, and it's potentially an update, but we'll find out, and we'll be back. I'm Kurt Bunny.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.